Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we have outcomes for you in some of the most important races across East County, including results in the El Cajon and La Mesa mayoral races, and some new faces winning elections in the Lemon Grove and La Mesa City Council races. Plus, we'll tell you who will be representing East County's State Assembly and State Senate districts. Then on our Capitol Report, hear the outcomes of the congressional districts in East County, which are more important than ever in a year when control of Congress hangs in the balance as of our show taping deadline. Learn the results of the statewide ballot initiatives on today's show, where the issues included state constitutional protection for abortion, gambling expansion, funding for arts and public schools, a tax on millionaires to fund fire protection, and more. We'll also tell you about a shift in control on the La Mesa-Spring Valley School District, where Democrats are winning their elections, as well as a conservative sweep on the Lakeside Union School District's Board of Trustees. Then we'll have the outcome for you on a countywide measure to legalize taxation of cannabis businesses, as well as the result in that all-important sheriff's race. On Crime Beat, learn about arrests of three family members for the abuse and murder of an 11-year-old Spring Valley girl. Her parents, suspected in her abuse, both worked in the ministry at Rock Church, a megachurch that has faced several allegations of child abuse in the past. On Tribal Beat, the Hamul Casino and Hamul Indian Village Tribe have made generous donations this Veterans Day to help two local organizations that assist veterans, also honoring members of the Hamul Tribe and workers who have served in our military. From Public News Service, learn why turnout among Latino voters lagged in the recent election. The San Diego County Grand Jury is looking for applicants willing to serve over the next year. Find out the qualifications and how to apply on today's show. The monkeypox emergency has ended in San Diego County thanks to the success of vaccinations and treatments, though health officials urge those eligible to complete their vaccinations. El Cajon's Mother Goose Parade, a cherished East County tradition, has been canceled for this year. Find out why on our show today. But the good news is the parade is planning to return next year in time for the Thanksgiving season, bigger and better than before. On Green Scene, the California Public Utilities Commission has announced changes to its net metering proposal, but seemingly nobody is happy, as the commission drops a proposed solar tax, but also aims to reduce compensation to homeowners who sell solar back to the grid. It's not a done deal, as the commission will hear testimony next week before voting in December. Starting this Veterans Day, admission to national parks nationwide will be free for all U.S. military members, Gold Star families, and veterans to honor their service and sacrifices. Find out more about the Biden administration's new program, which also includes entry to some 2,000 national forests and wildlife preserves, as well as national parks. La Mesa's efforts to reduce panhandling are meeting with resistance, and we'll have details later on today. Then we'll have some holiday tips for keeping your pets safe as you deck the halls for the season. And finally, as Thanksgiving draws near, we'll have some fun holiday trivia facts for those of you who may be looking for some safe family conversation topics on issues other than politics. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Marie Johnson with outcomes in East County's four city races. Preliminary election results indicate incumbents are headed for re-election in La Mesa, El Cajon, and Lemon Grove. The power of incumbency proves stronger than partisan politics across East County. Though city races are nonpartisan, political parties endorsed candidates and expended resources walking precincts to campaign for their party's choice. Incumbents in both parties hold solid leads, though Democrats appear likely to pick up a seat in both the La Mesa and Lemon Grove council races following the retirement of Republican incumbents that left open seats. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, a Republican, has a solid 72% of the votes tallied so far. His opponent, Realtor Arnie Levine, A Democrat has 28%. The mayor ran on a track record of boosting revenues through bringing in new hotels and reopening the Performing Arts Center, while Levine criticized Mayor Wells' defiance of public health mandates, including business shutdowns during the pandemic. El Cajon Councilman Gary Kendrick ran unopposed, drawing 100% of the votes. But El Cajon's Measure P to increase the city sales tax to a penny per dollar is losing 58% to 42%. La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis, a Democrat, also appears poised to win re-election with nearly 50% of the vote. His opponent, former council member Christine Alessio, a Republican, has 46%. Some analysts had viewed Arapostathis as vulnerable due to the May 2020 riot that happened on his watch when multiple buildings burned to the ground. But his opponent drew criticism for her support of vigilante groups in the wake of the riot. The two also differed on development issues, with Alessio calling for design guidelines and a moratorium on high rises in the downtown village. In the La Mesa City Council race, there are two seats on the ballot with five candidates in the citywide race. Laura Lothian is seeking re-election, while the second seat is open due to the retirement of Bill Baber. Lothian, a Republican, narrowly leads with 25% of the vote, followed by Patricia Dillard and Majin Offsham, both Democrats with 23.5% and 21% respectively. Tony Orlando, a conservative pastor, has 19%. Kathleen Brand, a Democrat who dropped out of the race, has still drawn 11% of the vote. If the results hold, it will be a win for Democrats, who will hold four of the five seats on the La Mesa City Council. In addition, Matt Strabone has 51% of the votes in the city treasurer's race and is poised to become the first Democrat in the city's history to hold the position. In Lemon Grove, Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza, a Democrat, appears poised to win re-election with 27% of the vote. A second seat on the council is open due to the retirement of Jerry Jones. Allison Snow and Stephanie Klein, both Democrats, are currently at 25% and 17%, followed by Blanca Lopez Brown, a Lemon Grove School Board member, with 16%, and activist Jessica Heredia at 15%.
This is John Tidwell with results at East County State Legislative Races. Assemblywoman Akila Weber, MD, a Democrat, medical doctor, and former La Mesa Council member, is cruising to an easy victory over Republican Corbin Sabol in the 79th Assembly District. Dr. Weber has made health care a priority, along with restorative justice and legislation to help families. Redistricting pitted two incumbent Republican Assembly members against each other in the 75th Assembly District. Assemblyman Randy Vopel has been ousted by Assemblywoman Marie Waldron, the Assembly Republican leader and former Escondido Council member. Waldron received 67% of the votes tallied so far, while Vopel drew just 33%. A staunch conservative and pro-life legislator, she is a member of the Mental Health Caucus and has served on the Assembly Health Committee. A former member of the San Diego County Opioid Task Force, she now serves on the Stanford 5-Year Initiative on Neuroscience, a group fostering communications between policymakers on mental health, addiction, and opioid drugs. In the 40th State Senate District, Senator Brian Jones, a Republican, leads by nearly 11 points over challenger Joseph Rocha, a Democrat, military veteran, and prosecutor. Jones has long won his legislative races by large margins, but redistricting resulted in a nearly even party registration balance in his district. Democrats had poured money into the race for TV ads and other campaign messaging in hopes of flipping the seat, but were unable to defeat Jones, a former Santee councilman and chairman of the Assembly Republican Caucus.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Marie Johnson with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. The balance of power in Congress hangs in the balance this election. Historically, the party that holds the presidency loses seats in Congress during the midterm elections. But while Republicans appear likely to retake the majority in the House of Representatives, the predicted red wave was more like a ripple, gaining only a few seats. Many MAGA Republicans, election deniers, and insurrection supporters lost their races, including firebrand Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. Control of the Senate remains too close to call. Results in Arizona, Nevada, and Georgia will determine which party controls the Senate, with Georgia heading to a special runoff election in early December. In San Diego County, all five incumbent congressional members are in the lead and appear likely to hold on to their seats, though one race is still too close to call. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs, a liberal Democrat whose 51st district includes portions of East County and San Diego, breezes to re-election with 59% of the votes counted so far over Republican Stan Kaplan with 41%. One of the youngest members of Congress, Jacobs said after her victory, "We are at a pivotal moment for our country, and if we're going to address the most pressing issues of our time and fight against the threats to our democracy and our bodily autonomy, we need more young voices in Washington ready to work on our oldest problems in a new way." She added that she aims to keep fighting for, quote, "a future that works for all of us, a future with affordable child care, support for our military families, common sense gun safety laws, lower costs for hardworking San Diegans, and where the right to an abortion is once again the law of the land." East County Republican Congressman Daryl Issa has 60% of the vote in the 49th Congressional District over his opponent, Stephen Houlihan, a nurse with a master's in business degree who has 40% of the vote. Houlihan criticized Issa's anti-abortion stance and the congressman's acceptance of over $150,000 in federal loan forgiveness for his family's company after voting against COVID relief funds for businesses. But those issues were not enough to overcome the heavy Republican registration advantage. Democrats Scott Peters and Juan Vargas are also winning their congressional re-election bids handily, with 60% and 64% of the votes over their lesser-known Republican challengers, Corey Gustafson and Tyler Geffney. Congressman Mike Levin, a Democrat, had been considered vulnerable due to redistricting that made his district more competitive. But after President Joe Biden came to San Diego last Thursday to campaign for Levin, Levin has a narrow 51% to 49% lead over Republican Brian Marriott. TV ads for Levin highlighted Marriott's extreme stance on abortion, opposing abortion even when a woman's life is at risk. Levin may have benefited, too, from a national wave of women turning out to vote in the wake of the Supreme Court decision granting states the right to ban or restrict abortion access.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Next up, Susan Taylor will have the outcomes on the statewide ballot propositions.
California voters have overwhelmingly approved a constitutional right to abortion, but soundly defeated legalized sports wagering both on and off tribal lands. They also voted down taxing high-income earners to bolster wildfire protection, but voted in favor of increasing funding for arts and music education in public schools. Voters also approved banning flavored tobacco products, but once again voted down a measure to require the presence of a doctor, nurse, or physician assistant during kidney dialysis treatment. They also voted down a plan to raise taxes to fund wildfire prevention and electric vehicle expansion. Proposition 1, which provides a constitutional right to reproductive freedom, has 65% of the vote. As for the sports wagering initiatives, Prop 26 is failing soundly with 70% voting no, while Prop 27 went down in flames with over 83% of Californians statewide opposed. Prop 28 is passing with a strong 61.5% voting in favor of public school arts and music education funding. Prop 29, the measure to regulate kidney dialysis clinics, which has gone before voters unsuccessfully in the past, once again got shot down by nearly 70% of the voters. Prop 30, which sought to tax the wealthy to fund the purchase of electric vehicles and wildfire prevention programs, was opposed by 59% of voters. Prop 30 was supported by Democrats in the legislature and by an environmental group, but drew opposition from some traditional allies, including Governor Gavin Newsom and teachers' unions. But California voters overwhelmingly approved Prop 31, which outlaws sales of flavored tobacco and flavored additives used to make tobacco products more attractive to young people, at a time when health officials have warned of an alarming rise in vaping among younger Americans. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Sue Taylor.
The governing board of the La Mesa Spring Valley School District will likely have a Democratic majority if early election leads hold for Caitlin Tiffany, Rebecca McCray, and Brianna Costin. They would represent Area 1, 2, and 3, respectively, and were endorsed by both the California Teachers Association and the San Diego County Democratic Party. McCray, an incumbent, has nearly 57% of the vote over Miriam Moody and appears to have won re-election. Tiffany, an assistant biology professor at Mesa College and assistant dance coach at Santee High School, has over 63% of the votes in her race against former board trustee Jim Long. Costin, a La Mesa planning commissioner, has a slimmer 3-point lead over Kyle Herman, a history and political science professor at Chula Vista Christian University. As of our show taping deadline, Costin has 51.6% and Herman has 48.4%. Long and Moody were endorsed by the County Republican Party. Historically, the La Mesa Spring Valley School District has been controlled by a Republican majority for many years. At times, that majority has drawn controversy, such as when the board refused to allow a speech by President Obama to schoolchildren to be shown in the district schools, or when the board filled vacancies by appointments of conservatives, including a church secretary chosen over more applicants with education experience, including a PTA president and member of the district's bond oversight committee, as well as a former teachers' union representative. The board has also faced allegations of racism raised by trustee Charda Bell, an African-American member and Democrat who opted not to seek re-election amid a residency challenge. Megan Epperson, a Republican, also did not seek re-election. While the board has also faced pushback from conservative parents concerned over COVID restrictions and learning losses during the pandemic, moderate and progressive voters appear to have won out over conservative voices if the election results hold and put Democrats in control of the school board. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell. Lakeside Union School District's governing board will look dramatically different as a result of the November 8th election. Three full-term seats and one short-term seat were on the ballot, but only one of the incumbents up for re-election, Andrew Hayes, has won re-election. Three others, Bonnie LaChapa, Holly Ferrante, and Don Wiseman, are trailing by substantial margins. All of the leading candidates are endorsed by the Republican Party, though the race is officially nonpartisan. In addition to Hayes, challengers Jim Bennett and Ron Casper appear poised to win full-term seats, while Autumn Ellenson is winning the short-term seat by a resounding margin of more than two-thirds. Democrats had endorsed Ferrante, Gordon, and Wiseman, while Cruz and LaChapa had no party endorsements. In the race for three full-term seats currently, Hayes has over 25% of the vote. Bennett has nearly 21%, and Casper 17%. LaChapa trails with just under 13%. Ferrante has 11.5%, Cruz has 6.5%, and Gordon less than 6%. In the race for the short-term seat, Ellenson has a clear victory with more than 68% of the votes, while Wiseman has less than 32%. Who are the newcomers set to join the board? Two of the three, Casper and Ellenson, answered questionnaires sent by East County Magazine. Bennett sent information to Voters Edge. Casper holds master's degrees in special education and family counseling. He completed PhD coursework in psychology before deciding teaching was his passion. He spent 30 years as a teacher with a background in family counseling and school administration training. He also worked as a substitute teacher in the Lakeside District and as a community volunteer with the Lakeside Fire Department, on the Lakeside Planning Group, and with County Parks and Recreation. Full disclosure, he's also written freelance articles for East County Magazine on issues ranging from wildfires to homelessness. Casper says, "My priorities are a rescue plan for all kids who have fallen behind academically or socially after 2 years of COVID effects on our schools, ensuring we have updated and have the very best safe school plans for our children and staff, and spearhead further drug education as the epidemic of drugs, and especially fentanyl, is resulting in the loss of thousands of young people in the U.S. Ellenson has a Master of Arts degree in teaching. She has taught in elementary and middle schools, currently serving as a school administration and curriculum specialist. She has 3 children in the district and says their needs have not been met in the past 3 years, citing learning losses during the pandemic. She has opposed mask mandates and keeping schools closed last fall, and believes, quote, "The most important thing is to keep our children in school," end quote, with support and interventions when needed. She says she wants to reflect community values and supports parental rights to provide alternative books to children with a common sense approach to education. Bennett is a director of facilities who says he supports a back-to-basics approach to education, including principles of reading, writing, math, and sciences, quote, "without influence of agendas and propaganda," end quote. He wants parents to have more rights and believes public schools should not be in charge of children's health, religion, or social beliefs. In his Voters Edge statement, Bennett wrote, "I believe that all students and staff have value and works because they are children of God."
San Diego County will soon have a new sheriff. Kellyanne Martinez has established a substantial lead in early returns, according to the San Diego County Registrar of Voters. Undersheriff Martinez, a Democrat, leads Attorney John Hammerling, a Republican, by 57% to 43%. If her lead continues, Martinez will serve as the department's first female sheriff following her appointment last year as the county law enforcement agency's first female second-in-command. She has been with the department since 1985 and has former Sheriff Bill Gore's endorsement, along with that of several other prominent office holders, including County Supervisor Nathan Fletcher and San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria. Hammerling, a former prosecutor with the San Diego's City Attorney's Office, resigned following concerns over comments he made regarding transgender individuals. The former San Diego police officer and U.S. Marine received endorsements from prominent Republicans, including the state party, former San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner, and County Supervisor Joel Anderson. Sheriff Gore retired in February, a year before his term had been set to end, leaving Martinez, who had already declared as a candidate in the sheriff's race, to serve as acting sheriff. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Measure A, which would impose a tax on all cannabis businesses in San Diego County's unincorporated areas, is passing by a healthy margin. Funds raised would go into the county's general fund to be used for health care, fire safety, parks, infrastructure, and more, as well as shutting down illegal marijuana operations. The county estimates that Measure A, if approved, would generate $3 million to $3.5 million. Of ballots tallied so far, Nearly 60% voted in favor, a total of 372,581 votes, while 40%, or 251,880, voted against. The measure has a margin of more than 19%, with 400,000 ballots left to be counted as of Friday. County supervisors have already approved legalizing cannabis businesses in the unincorporated areas, so the tax would assure that the county receives a share of those revenues. Measure A would tax medical and recreational cannabis businesses. The tax rate would be 6% for retail outlets such as dispensaries, 3% for distributors, 2% for testing, 3% or $10 per canopy square foot for growing, and 4% for other businesses. The tax would not apply in cities such as La Mesa and San Diego County, which already assess a tax on cannabis ventures. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Three people have been arrested and charged in relation to the death of 11-year-old Arabella McCormack of Spring Valley. Those arrested are the child's adoptive mother, Letitia McCormack, and Letitia McCormack's parents, Stanley Tom and Adela Tom. All are charged with torture and willful cruelty to a child. Stanley Tom and Letitia McCormack have also been charged with murder. The child's adoptive father, Brian McCormack, shot and killed himself in the presence of deputies investigating the case. A family member and a neighbor told NBC7 that Brian McCormack was a Border Patrol agent. He was also an ordained elder at Rock Church, according to the Roy Report, which found a Google search cache indicating that he also served as Ministry Leadership Program Coordinator at the Rock School of Ministry. His wife, Letitia McCormack, the child's mother, was also a volunteer ministry leader for the church, Rock Church confirmed to NBC7. Deputies from the Rancho San Diego Sheriff Station responded to a call of a child in distress on August 30th, shortly before 2 a.m. at a home on Lakeview Drive in Spring Valley. The child, Arabella McCormack, was rushed to a hospital with suspected signs of child abuse, but her health declined and she died at the hospital. Arabella's two sisters, ages 6 and 7, have been removed from the family's home and are now living with a foster family after being treated in a hospital, according to the sheriff's department. The children's birth parents, Chelsea Zambrano, said their children appeared emaciated in photos with bruises, scabs, and broken teeth, according to an article in Roy's report. The parent also told Roy's that their youngest daughters were in intensive care to treat an electrolyte imbalance resulting from malnutrition. The couple said they lost custody of their children in 2013 after an incident they said involved a verbal altercation but not physical abuse. They contend that their children's adoption violated the Indian Child Welfare Act, intended to keep Native American families together whenever possible. They said after viewing photos of the children that showed signs of starvation and abuse, and after an in-person visit in 2018, they reported their concerns to both Child Welfare Services and the Rock Church, but that neither took their concerns seriously. They told Roy's report that Arabella's school contacted CWS 4 times in 2018, alleging that Brian McCormack abused her on campus, but the children denied the allegations and no action was taken by authorities. The adoptive parents have not seen their children in person since 2019. Two of the suspects in her death were arrested November 7th in Lucerne Valley, San Bernardino County, and the third was apprehended in Ocean Beach. The case raises very troubling questions. Why did Child Protective Services and Rock Church fail to take action to protect Arabella and her siblings? The Rock Church has faced other child abuse allegations in the past. A former teacher at the Rock Academy run by Rock Church, David Looney, pleaded guilty earlier this year to crimes associated with alleged sexual abuse of a former student. Rock Church has also been sued by multiple families in civil court, alleging that another church employee sexually abused their children back in 2013. A former Rock Church pastor has also sued, claiming he was fired for reporting witnessing child molestation in an elevator by a church employee. However, the suits were later dismissed. Mayling Nazar, a church spokesperson, told Roy's report that Rock Church is committed to cooperating with investigators and extended condolences and prayers for those grieving the loss of Arabella McCormack. The church has also revoked its ordination of Letitia McCormack, who no longer works there, NBC7 reports. The Sheriff's Department is asking anybody with information on these crimes to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330. After hours, you can call the Sheriff's non-emergency line, that's 858-565-5200, and you can remain anonymous and send in tips at Crime Stoppers by calling 888-580-8477. The Sheriff's Department says the safety of our children is of paramount importance to the Sheriff's Department. We respond to all allegations alleging child abuse and neglect, they say. Conducting an accurate investigation is a long and tedious process. Gathering evidence and conducting interviews must be done methodically while protecting the children and preserving the rights of parents and family members, the Sheriff's statement concludes.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. Hamul Casino and the Hamul Indian Village of California Tribe held their 6th annual Veterans Day luncheon honoring veterans on Friday. Supervisors Nathan Fletcher and Joel Anderson were on hand to join with tribal leaders in honoring the 53 members of the tribe and its casino team who have served in the military. Erica Pinto, chairwoman of Hamul Indian Village, says Native Americans have a long history of military service and at a higher rate than any other demographic. This event offers the tribe an opportunity to honor this legacy and to thank our Hamul Casino veterans. According to the Military Times, since 9/11, nearly 19% of all Native Americans have served in the military, in comparison to an average of 14% for all other ethnicities. At the luncheon, the tribe also presented checks for $10,000 each to two veterans groups, Saddles in Service and 0800, doubling the tribe's past donations. Chairwoman Pinto says both recipients this year, Saddles in Service and 0800, are doing heroic work for our veterans, changing one life at a time. We're truly honored to be able to recognize their service and those who have fought so bravely, the chairwoman adds. Founded in 2017 in Alpine, Saddles in Service promotes mental health, wellness, and healing of veterans, active duty military, and first responders through equine-assisted activities. Heroes and their families with PTSD, anxiety, depression, stress, or traumatic brain injuries are partnered with a rescue horse to help them rediscover their joy, hope, confidence, and purpose. The successful program has served nearly 700 heroes and adopted 27 healing horses. The goal of 0800 is to ease the transition from military to civilian life. Formed in 2014 by over 100 San Diego County public, private, and military leaders and groups, 0800 matches returning vets with a resource and outreach specialist to help meet their needs for employment, education, health, social, and community connections. Since becoming a nonprofit in January 2019, 0800 has linked over 4,500 transitioning service members and their spouses to community resources and opportunities here in San Diego and neighboring counties.
Conventional wisdom says in a close election like this week's midterms, turnout is key, and a new poll from a Latino rights group finds that both parties might have blown it in terms of outreach to their community. The Naleo Education Fund polled Latinos across the U.S. weekly for the past 9 weeks and found just over half said they were not contacted by either party before the election. Dorian Kahl with Naleo Educational Fund says of those who were contacted, 63% heard from the Democratic Party and 36% heard from Republicans.
This was another opportunity for either party to engage the Latino community, and it looks like it was a missed opportunity for both parties to really engage the Latino community on the issues that really mattered.
In the poll, 48% of Latinos rated the rising cost of living and inflation as top issues, and 26% of Latinos cited abortion rights as their most important issue. The poll also found 76% of respondents support a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. But Cal warns it's a mistake to think this is the only issue Latinos care about.
what is top of mind is really around rising cost of living, for example, reproductive rights, lowering the cost of healthcare, you know, addressing mass shootings, climate change, and so forth. So certainly that would be top of mind as the Latinos went to the polls.
So what would Latinos like the new Congress to focus on? The poll found big majorities in favor of allowing Medicare to negotiate lower prices on prescription drugs, banning assault rifles nationwide, and legalizing recreational marijuana. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement from the San Diego Superior Court. The court is now seeking dedicated residents with sound judgment from throughout the county to serve on the 2023-2024 San Diego County Grand Jury. The grand jury investigates citizen complaints and performs its traditional function as a watchdog over government agencies. It does not conduct criminal investigations. Applications can be downloaded from the San Diego Superior Court's website at sdcourt.ca.gov or the grand jury's website at sdcounty.ca.gov/grandjury. Applications can also be obtained by calling 619-450-7272 or by stopping by the Central Courthouse downtown or the East County, North County, or South County regional centers. The 19-member grand jury will work 4 days a week, approximately 6 hours a day, from July 1st, 2023 through June 30th, 2024. The grand jury office is located in downtown San Diego. A small stipend per day, plus mileage and downtown parking are provided. All application forms must be received by January 20th. Qualified candidates will be nominated for a random drawing tentatively scheduled for June 2nd. The random drawing gives each supervisorial district equal representation by population. Individuals who meet the following requirements are encouraged to apply: U.S. citizen, at least 18 years old, sufficient knowledge of the English language, and has lived in San Diego County for at least 1 year prior to selection. All candidates will be required to pass a criminal background check.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health report. San Diego County's local health emergency for monkeypox expired on November 10th. County health officials are taking this step after a significant decrease in new monkeypox cases, with 5 or less cases a week since mid-October. This decline is a result of successful outbreak response measures, including contact tracing and vaccinations, according to county officials. The county declared the health emergency for monkeypox on August 2nd to effectively respond to the virus with vaccine distributions and treatment. County Public Health Officer Dr. Wilma Wooten says there is now ample testing, treatment, and vaccines, adding, "Although the virus remains in the region and there is still work to be done in stopping its spread, I am very proud of how the community and our healthcare partners collaborated in responding to the outbreak and am confident that will continue into the future." Now, the county will keep providing the monkeypox vaccine at vaccination events and county public health clinics. Those being vaccinated now have the option of an intradermal shot into the skin of the forearm or a more traditional shot in the upper arm. Outreach and education efforts will also continue. Nearly 13,000 people in San Diego County have received at least one dose of the monkeypox vaccine. Eligible San Diegans who have not received their first or second dose are encouraged to do so. Those eligible include men who have sex with men, sex workers, people with HIV, and anybody in close contact with a person with a known or suspected case of monkeypox. The county has had a total of 448 monkeypox cases since the first case was reported on June 15th.
The Mother Goose Parade in El Cajon, one of San Diego County's longest-running and most beloved holiday events, has been canceled for this year. Parade organizers had looked forward to returning after cancellations during the pandemic, but Patty Tuttle Shyrock, executive director and past president of the Mother Goose Parade Association, announced that due to unprecedented staffing, logistics, and supply chain issues, We are unable to deliver the high standards of entertainment and joy that the Mother Goose Parade has brought to tens of thousands of families and residents over the decades. We did not want to produce an event that was anything less than outstanding, she said. Originally produced in 1947, the Mother Goose Parade is San Diego County's largest parade and has become an annual staple for generations. Traditionally held the Sunday before Thanksgiving, the parade is filled with floats, bands, equestrian performers, huge balloons, and more. It's been hailed as one of the largest community parades west of the Mississippi. Fortunately, Shyrock promised that the Mother Goose Parade will return next year and thanked sponsors and community champions who are helping to build excitement for the 2023 event. You can make a donation to help support the Mother Goose Parade Association, a nonprofit group, at mothergooseparade.org. In the meantime, you can watch the 2020 and 2021 virtual parades, as well as see photos and videos of previous years' live parades at mothergooseparade.org. Reporting for East County Magazine in El Cajon on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The California Public Utility Commission on November 11th has released a revised version of its Net Metering 3.0 proposal to regulate rooftop solar. The agency will hear testimony at a public meeting on Wednesday, November 16th, and is slated to vote December 15th on the measure. If adopted, the new rules would take effect in April. The scaled-back plan eliminates controversial consumer fees that have been criticized by solar advocates and by Governor Gavin Newsom, who appointed five members of the CPUC. Critics say the CPUC's original plan was harmful to the state's goal of transitioning to renewable energy. But the new plan will cost consumers money in another way, by reducing the amount of money utilities must pay homeowners who supply power to the grid. The agency's challenge is how to help the state meet its ambitious goal of reaching zero carbon energy by 2045 and a 90% cut in carbon emissions by 2035 without hurting low-income consumers or discouraging homeowners from going solar in the first place. David Harris, renewable energy team leader of San Diego 350, a climate change advocacy group, issued this statement. While San Diego 350 is relieved that the CPUC has abandoned its disastrous proposal for a rooftop solar tax, the revised proposal still cuts the rate paid to solar owners by 75%, which will dramatically reduce build-out of rooftop solar and prevent California from achieving its renewable energy and climate targets, he says. The group is calling on the CPUC to withdraw this proposal and instead implement policies that, quote, accelerate the just transition of fossil fuels and enable communities of concern who are least responsible for dangerous carbon emissions to share equitably in the benefits of the clean energy revolution. Kathy Fairbanks, a spokesperson for Affordable Clean Energy for All, which represents 120 organizations, including the major utilities such as San Diego Gas and Electric and Pacific Gas and Electric, calls the changes stark, CalMatters reports. Fairbanks adds, it's clear there was some influence. Specifically, the revised rules would remove a proposed $8 per kilowatt monthly fixed solar tax on new residential systems. It would also cut utilities' payments to homeowners for excess power produced that they sell by up to 75% from current rates. The change would not apply to residents with existing solar systems, however, but would stick it to those who add solar in the future. It would also fund $900 million in new incentive payments to help buy rooftop solar systems, with $630 million set aside for low-income households. The proposed rules would encourage installation of solar panels as well as battery storage, and it would set lower rates aimed at shifting consumers' use of power to times of day that improve grid reliability. The CPUC is required under state law to update its net metering rules, which triggered a process that's gone on for years now. Bernadette Del Chiaro, executive director of the California Solar and Storage Association, says the proposed rules would really hurt, CalMatters reports. She predicts the newest proposal needs more work, or it will replace the solar tax with a steep solar decline. Net metering policy was implemented first in 1995 and established a framework for large utilities to buy excess energy from homeowners and supplement power to the grid. The program provided incentives to reduce the upfront costs of buying solar power systems. The original proposal largely reflected the interests of the state's three largest utilities, however. It was attacked by the solar industry, clean energy, and consumer advocates, as well as environmental justice advocates. The new proposal addresses the evolution of clean energy and its impact on the electric grid, pushing batteries to store solar power after dark. Officials say the rule would align state policy with a grid that is saturated with solar energy during the day, but overburdened with demand for power when the sun goes down. Starting this Veterans Day, November 11th, members of the U.S. military, veterans, and Gold Star families can be admitted free to all national parks. A free lifetime military pass is available for Gold Star families who lost a member in the military service, as well as all U.S. veterans. A free annual military pass is available for current U.S. military members and their dependents. The passes provide free access to over 2,000 federal recreation areas, including national parks, wildlife refuges, and national forests. National Park Service Director Chuck Sams says this is a small token of appreciation for veterans who have bravely dedicated their lives to defending our freedom. In a press release, the National Park Service states the free military pass is a way to thank current U.S. military members and their dependents, Gold Star families, and U.S. military veterans for their support of our country and to encourage them to explore recreational opportunities on their public lands and waters. The pass covers entrance fees to the parks and standard amenity fees, the NPS said, but it does not cover expanded amenity or user fees for activities such as camping, transportation, special recreation permits, reservation fees, or special tours. The new passes can be obtained on the United States Geological Survey website. That website is store.usgs.gov/militarypass. Again, it's store.usgs.gov/militarypass. Reporting for East County Magazine on KSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
La Mesa is facing pushback over new signs asking the public not to support panhandling, Times of San Diego reports. The city has characterized the signs as needed to reduce homelessness and encourage those on the streets to utilize services instead. The signs direct people to call the city's homeless outreach and mobile engagement team and provide the phone number, email, and website. But a panhandler named John told a reporter that he's a Vietnam veteran and isn't homeless. He says he lives with his brother and has food, but panhandles because he needs money to pay his bills. "I have a room," he said. "That's it." La Mesa City Manager Greg Humora said two recent signs were installed October 18th, one on a Jackson Drive median near Fletcher Parkway, and the other near the Costco parking lot at Marengo and Fletcher Parkway. Someone promptly covered up the Marengo sign with a cardboard box. After a Public Works employee removed it, the next day the sign was covered up with a wig. The other sign, which read, "Please do not support panhandling," promptly had the word "not" defaced. Similar signs were torn down completely on Dallas Street and Amaya Drive. Critics aren't confined to street people. La Mesa Councilman Bill Bauer told Times of San Diego, "I don't support installing these signs. We need more compassion and less bureaucracy, especially for our homeless." City Manager Humora said staff developed the signs, though the city council was aware of them. La Mesa got the idea from neighboring El Cajon, which has used similar signs for the past 5 years. Humora said the anti-panhandling program won't be expanded, and he doesn't know if any more signs will be put up. Martha Sullivan, an advocate for the homeless with San Diego Housing Emergency Alliance, said she's not aware of any data on whether the signs work, but added, "Poor people should not be punished for trying to eat." Sullivan said that if local governments wish to reduce panhandling, they should collaborate with other local governments to supply sufficient food, housing, physical and mental health treatment, including addiction services and long-term care for elderly and or disabled residents. Former La Mesa Mayor Art Madrid said he thinks the signs are insulting, offensive, and demeaning, he said, adding that he can remember a La Mesa councilman whose son was homeless, as well as the son of an El Cajon mayor who was homeless. As for John, the Vietnam veteran panhandler, he says he's thinking of moving to another state now, but he notes that California already has laws prohibiting panhandling within 500 feet of a freeway ramp, as well as banning panhandlers from accosting anyone or aggressively soliciting donations. How does he know? He says he was an El Cajon police officer back in the 1960s. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Tidwell.
It's time to deck the halls for the holiday season, but some holiday decorations can pose safety hazards for your cat or dog. So San Diego County's Animal Service Department is offering these tips to protect your pet. Keep pets away from mistletoe, holly, and poinsettias, since these are toxic to animals. Consider using artificial holiday plants instead. Chocolate is toxic to pets, so keep stockings with chocolate treats out of reach, as well as any chocolate cookies you might leave out for Santa. Anchor your Christmas tree so pets can't tip it over. Clear fishing twine tied to the top of the tree and secured to a ceiling or wall is a simple way to keep your tree standing and protect your ornaments too. Never use tree preservatives in water in your Christmas tree stand, since this can be deadly if cats or dogs drink it. Cats love to play with tinsel and curling ribbon, but then they'll try to eat it. Tinsel is toxic and ribbon can obstruct your pet's intestinal tract, so keep these items away from curious critters. Hide electrical cords from your pets and make sure they can't play with or knock over any candles. Many dogs and cats get overwhelmed with all the hustle and bustle of the holidays, so having a quiet room allows them to escape and sleep undisturbed. On New Year's Eve, loud booms from fireworks can scare your canine companion. Some dogs will jump over fences to escape the noise. They run for miles and become lost, so set aside a safe, quiet place and be sure your dog is wearing identification just in case. Microchip both dogs and cats, since they slip out the door unnoticed while you're busy greeting holiday visitors. And if someone finds your lost pet, a vet's office or shelter can scan for a microchip, and you can easily be reunited. County Animal Service offers low-cost microchipping every Tuesday through Sunday, which includes national registration. You can also sign up for Finding Rover and upload a photo of your pet using your computer or smartphone. This free service uses facial recognition to help lost and found dogs be reunited with their owners. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chardé Fontenot.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here with John Fastier. This holiday season, if you're looking for some safe conversation topics to liven up your next gathering with friends and family without bringing up politics, here are some fascinating holiday trivia facts to share.
Candy canes are stocking stuffer traditions, but they were actually invented to keep children quiet during church.
In medieval times, the main dish served at Christmas dinners was peacock, not turkey.
Jingle Bells was originally written for Thanksgiving, not Christmas.
Christmas trees were once considered pagan symbols, but today 350 million of them are grown on Christmas tree farms in the U.S., where 98% of all Christmas trees sold are now sustainably raised. A Christmas tree grows for 15 years on average before it is cut.
The world's tallest snowman was actually a snow woman, standing over 122 feet tall. She was built by townspeople in Bethel, Maine, with wreaths as eyes, skis for eyelashes, tires as buttons, and trees for her arms.
According to the Bible, magi, also known as wise men, brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the Christ child born in a manger. The term magi derives from ancient Greece and Persia, where it meant magicians or astronomers.
The Magi reportedly followed the Star of Bethlehem. To this day, scientists are not sure what that star was. Possibly a conjunction of two planets, a comet, a supernova, or something else that lit up the sky.
The first electric Christmas lights to light up the sky were invented by Thomas Edison.
Hanukkah is also called the Festival of Lights. A menorah is lit for 8 nights and traditionally placed in a window to remind the outside world of the miracle of oil that burned for 8 days after rededication of a temple in Jerusalem.
Originally, the only Hanukkah gifts were small amounts of money known as gelt, a tradition that was designed to teach children the importance of charity.
The first Hanukkah party in the White House was hosted by President George W. Bush, a tradition that continues to this day.
The most popular Christmas song of all times, White Christmas, was written by Irving Berlin, a Jewish songwriter.
Americans spend 6 times more on gifts than food during the holiday season, but they are also more apt to donate to charities at this time of year.
Santa Claus would have to travel at over 5 million miles per hour in order to deliver presents to all of the children on Earth in a single night.
The tradition of making New Year's resolutions was started by the ancient Babylonians, who actually celebrated the New Year in springtime. The most common resolution was to return borrowed farm equipment.
Roman Emperor Julius Caesar established the Julian calendar that we use today, with January 1st as the first day of the new year.
Today, the most common resolution is to lose weight. Not surprising, since the average Christmas dinner in America contains over 7,000 calories.
Dropping a ball in Times Square to ring in the new year began in 1907 because fireworks had been banned as too dangerous. The ball has been a New Year's tradition ever since, except in 1942 and 1943 when it was canceled due to wartime restrictions.
The first ball was made of iron and wood, adorned with 100 light bulbs. It weighed 700 pounds. Nowadays, the ball weighs nearly 12,000 pounds and shimmers with 2,668 Waterford crystals.
All year long, visitors to Times Square in New York City write their New Year's wishes on pieces of confetti. At the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, those wishes are included in over a ton of confetti that showers the crowd gathered to ring in the new year. And now from all of us at East County Magazine, to all of you, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, joyous Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. East County Magazine has won more than 125 major journalism awards. With reporting that's making a positive difference in our region, the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.